This is Chapter 4 of An Outline of Esoteric Science by Rudolf Steiner. It is 114 paragraphs long, a rather long chapter, entitled Cosmic Evolution and the Human Being. Introductory Thoughts. In previous chapters, we saw that our human makeup consists of four parts: the physical body, the life body, the astral body, and the vehicle of the eye. The eye works within the other three elements to transform them. On a lower level, this transformation results in the sentient soul, the mind soul, and the consciousness soul. On a higher level, in the spirit self, the life spirit, and the spirit body. Now, these members of our human nature relate to the cosmos as a whole in a great variety of ways, and their evolution is linked to that of the cosmos. By considering cosmic evolution, we gain insight into the deeper secrets of our human makeup. It is obvious that our life is connected in many ways to our surroundings, to where it evolves. Even external science, through the facts available to it, has been forced to see that the earth itself, our dwelling in the most comprehensive sense of the word, has undergone an evolution. Science refers to stages of the earth's existence when human beings did not yet exist on this planet in their present form, and it demonstrates how humankind slowly and gradually evolved from very basic stages of civilization to our present circumstances. Thus, science too has come to believe that there is a connection between human evolution and the evolution of our celestial body, the earth. Spiritual science traces this connection by means of knowledge that derives its facts from perception enhanced by spiritual organs. Parenthesis, spiritual science is used here to mean the same thing as quote-unquote esoteric science, as should be evident from the context. Parenthesis. In doing so, it becomes apparent that the actual inner spiritual beings of human individuals have gone through a series of lives on this earth. In this way, spiritual research arrives at a point in time in the distant past when the inner essence of each human being first embarked on an outer life in the present sense of the word. This first earthly embodiment was when the eye first began to be active within the three bodies, astral body, life body, and physical body, and to carry the fruits of this work over into a subsequent life. If we shift our view back to this point in time, we will become aware that within the earthly conditions encountered by the eye, the physical, etheric, and astral bodies were already developed and interconnected in a certain way. The eye then united for the first time with a being consisting of these three bodies and began to take part in their further evolution. Until reaching this level where they first encountered an eye, they had been evolving without one. To answer our questions about how these three bodies arrived at a stage of development where they were capable of receiving an eye, and about how this eye itself came into existence and became capable of working within these bodies, spiritual, scientific research must go still further back in time. We can only answer these questions by tracing the development of the earth itself by spiritual, scientific means. Through such research, we arrive at this planet's beginning point. A view based solely on facts supplied by our physical senses is not far-reaching enough to come to conclusions that have anything to do with this beginning. One such view concludes that all of the Earth's substance formed out of a primeval mist. It cannot be the task of this book to go into such ideas in more detail, because spiritual research is more concerned with spiritual causes lying behind matter than with the mere material processes of Earth's evolution. As an example, if there is a person in front of us who is raising a hand, this can suggest two different ways of looking at this action. We can either investigate the mechanism of the person's arm and the rest of his or her body and describe the process that is taking place as a purely physical one. Or we can turn our spiritual attention to what is going on in the person's soul and to his or her inner motivation for raising a hand. In a similar way, researchers schooled in spiritual perception see spiritual processes behind all the processes of the physical sense-perceptible world. To them, any transformation in the material aspect of the earth is a manifestation of spiritual forces lying behind matter. But if we go further and further back in time in our spiritual observation of the life of the earth, we eventually arrive at the point in evolution where matter first began to exist. This material element developed out of the spiritual. Before this point, only the spiritual element was present. Through further spiritual observation, we can see how this spiritual element partially condensed into matter, so to speak. The process taking place before us is the same thing on a higher level as what would take place if we were observing a container full of water undergoing some ingenious cooling process so that lumps of ice gradually form. Just as we see ice condensing out of something that used to be all water, spiritual observation allows us to trace how material things, processes, and beings condense out of an element that was formerly completely spiritual in character. This is how the earth developed from a spiritual cosmic being into a physical planet. Everything materially connected to it condensed out of what was formerly spiritually connected to it. However, we must not imagine that the spiritual element is ever totally transformed into matter. Matter is always only a transformed portion of the original spiritual element, which remains the actual guiding principle even while matter is evolving. It is reasonable to state that a view restricting itself to sense-perceptible physical processes and to what our intellect can conclude from them is not able to inform us about the spiritual element in question here. Let's imagine a being with senses that are capable of perceiving ice, but not the finer state of water from which ice emerges by means of cooling. For this being, water would simply not be present and could only be perceived when parts of it turned to ice. Likewise, the spiritual element that lies concealed behind earthly processes remains hidden from those who do not admit the existence of anything not present to the physical senses. If such people draw correct conclusions about earlier conditions on the earth from current physical perceptible facts, they will only be able to go back to the point in evolution where the pre-existing spiritual element partially condensed into matter. Their method of observation perceives as little of the pre-existing spiritual element as it does of the spiritual element currently at work behind matter. Only in the last chapters of this book will we be able to speak about the paths we must follow in order to learn to use spiritual perception to look back on the earlier states of the earth that are mentioned here. For the moment, it should only be mentioned that as far as spiritual research is concerned, facts about even the most distant past have not disappeared. Once a being has achieved physical existence, the material part of it disappears after the death of its body. However, the spiritual forces that have expelled this bodily element do not disappear in the same way. They leave their traces, exact reproductions of themselves, in the spiritual foundations of the world. If we are able to raise our perception from the level of the visible world to the invisible, we ultimately find ourselves face to face with something comparable to a mighty spiritual panorama that records all the bygone processes of the world. These imperishable traces of everything spiritual may be called the Akashic Record. If we designate the spiritually lasting element in the world, events, as their Akashic essence, in contrast to their transient forms. Now at this point it must be said again that research into supersensible realms of existence can only be carried out with the help of spiritual perception, which in this case means reading the Akashic Record. However, what has already been said in earlier parts of this book about similar instances also holds good here. Although supersensible facts can only be discovered by means of supersensible perception, once they have been discovered and communicated by the science of the supersensible, they can be understood by ordinary thinking, at least if it attempts to be truly unbiased. In the pages that follow, information on the Earth's evolutionary stages will be communicated from the standpoint of supersensible knowledge. The transformations our Earth planet has undergone will be followed all the way down to its present-day state. If we consider what now actually confronts us as mere sense perception, and then absorb what supersensible knowledge has to say about how what presently exists has been evolving since time immemorial, and if our thinking is truly impartial, we will be able to say, first of all, what this knowledge describes is thoroughly logical. Secondly, when we accept what is communicated by supersensible research as true, we can understand how the things we encounter have become what they are. Now, when we speak of logic in this context, of course, this doesn't mean that there is no possibility of logical error in any accounts of supersensible research. We will only speak of logic here in the same sense that we speak of it in ordinary life, in the physical world. Just as we are challenged to present things logically in the physical world, in spite of the fact that individuals presenting the facts of any given subject can fall into logical error, the same is true in supersensible research. It can even happen that researchers who are capable of perception in supersensible domains may succumb to error in presenting their results logically, and may be corrected by someone who, although not capable of supersensible perception, has the capacity for sound thinking. Essentially, however, there can be no objection to the logic applied in supersensible research. It should be totally unnecessary to emphasize that nothing can be said against the facts themselves on purely logical grounds. Just as the existence of a whale in the physical world can never be proved logically, but only by seeing one, only spiritual perception can recognize supersensible facts as such. However, it cannot be emphasized enough that before attempting to observe the spiritual world through our own perception, we must first acquire an overview of it, both by means of logic, as was indicated earlier, and by realizing how universally understandable the sense-perceptible manifest world becomes if we assume that the communications of esoteric science are correct. If we reject this path of preparation, all our experience in the supersensible world remains uncertain and even dangerous. We merely grope our way around. That's why this book presents the supersensible facts of Earth's evolution first, before discussing the actual path to supersensible knowledge. We should also keep in mind that if we use thinking as our exclusive means of finding our way into what supersensible knowledge has to say, this is not at all comparable to simply listening to an account of some physical process we cannot see for ourselves. In itself, pure thinking is already a supersensible activity. To the extent that it is a sense-oriented process, thinking cannot lead to supersensible processes all by itself. But if we apply it to the supersensible processes reported by supersensible perception, it then grows into the supersensible world on its own. In fact, even one of the very best ways of achieving perception in the supersensible domain is to grow into the higher world by thinking about the information supersensible knowledge conveys. If we do it this way, we enter the higher world with the greatest possible clarity. This is why a certain trend in spiritual scientific research considers this type of thinking to be the best possible first step in any spiritual scientific training. It should seem quite understandable that this book does not describe how the outer world confirms the supersensible with regard to every detail of Earth's evolution as perceived in the spirit. That was not what was intended when it was said that the hidden element can be detected everywhere in its manifest effects. What was meant was that everything we encounter can gradually be illuminated and become understandable if we see manifest events in the light provided by spiritual science. In the following pages, the manifest element's confirmation of the hidden element will be referred to in only a few characteristic instances in order to show how this can be done at any point in the course of practical life, wherever we choose to do so. An Overview of Planetary Incarnations. If we follow the Earth's development in reverse, in the sense of the above-mentioned spiritual scientific method of research, we arrive at a stage when our planet existed in a spiritual state. If we continue researching still further back in time, however, we find that the spiritual element previously existed as a physical embodiment of a sort. That is, we encounter a bygone physical planetary state that was later spiritualized. Still later, it rematerialized and was transformed into our Earth. The Earth as we know it thus appears as the reincarnation of an ancient planet. But spiritual science can go still further back, and when it does, it finds that this whole process was repeated two more times. This Earth of ours has undergone three prior planetary stages with intervening stages of spiritualization. The further back we trace these incarnations, the more subtle and delicate in character the physical element becomes. When faced with the descriptions that follow, it's natural to wonder how anyone of sound mind can possibly assume the existence of cosmic evolutionary stages lying so far back in the past. It must be said in response that for those who are now able to see and understand the spiritual element hidden in what is perceptible to the senses, insight into earlier stages of evolution, no matter how distant, is not an impossibility. Talking about evolution in the sense intended here is meaningless only for those who do not acknowledge this hidden spiritual element in the present. For those who do, previous stages of evolution are present in their perception of the present one, just as the one-year-old child is still present in their perception of a 50-year-old person. You may object that in this example, in addition to the 50-year-old, one-year-old children and all the stages in between are actually there for us to see. That's true, but it is equally true of the evolution of the spiritual element in the sense intended here. Anyone who has come to an objective conclusion on this matter will also see that in any comprehensive observation of the present, that also includes its spiritual element, past evolutionary stages really are present along with the perfected stages of present-day evolution, just as one-year-old babies are present along with 50-year-olds. If we can simply distinguish between the different successive stages of evolution, it is possible to see primeval events within the earthly events of the present. Now, in the form in which we are currently evolving, human beings appeared for the first time in the fourth of the above-mentioned planetary incarnations, the actual Earth itself. The essential feature of our current human makeup is that it comprises four parts: the physical body, the life body, the astral body, and the eye. However, this composite figure would not have been able to appear if it had not been prepared by the circumstances of prior evolution. Within the previous planetary incarnation, beings developed that already possessed three of the present four components of the human being, the physical body, the life body, and the astral body. These beings, who could be called the predecessors of human beings in a certain respect, still had no eye. But they had developed the three other parts and their interrelationships to the point of becoming mature enough to then receive the eye. Thus, our predecessors on the planet, in its previous incarnation, achieved a degree of maturity in the three parts they possessed. This planetary incarnation then passed over into a spiritual state, out of which a new physical planetary state then developed, namely that of the Earth. In this Earth, our matured human predecessors were present in a seminal state, so to speak. The entire planet, having undergone spiritualization and reappearance in a new form, was able to offer these embryonic humans, with their physical, etheric, and astral bodies, not only the possibility of developing to their previous level again, but also the possibility of moving beyond it by receiving the eye. The Earth phase of evolution, therefore, fell into two parts. In the first period, the Earth itself appeared as a reincarnation of the previous planetary stage. This recapitulation period, however, took place on a higher level than that of the previous incarnation because of the intervening stage of spiritualization. And at this point, the earth contained the seminal stages of our predecessors from the previous planet. These first developed to their previous level. Once they had achieved it, the first period was over. Because of its own higher level of evolution, however, the earth could then develop these seminal human beings still further by making them capable of receiving the eye. The second period in this earth phase of evolution is characterized by the unfolding of the eye within the physical, etheric, and astral bodies. Just as humankind is being brought to a higher level by the earth phase of evolution, this was also the case in each of the earlier planetary incarnations, since a human element was already present even during the first of these incarnations. This is why we can shed light on the essential nature of present-day human beings by tracing our evolution back to the very distant past, to the first planetary incarnation. Now, supersensible research gives names to these planetary incarnations, calling the first Saturn, the second, Sun, S-U-N, the third, Moon, and the fourth, Earth. We must keep clearly in mind, however, that these classifications must not immediately be associated with the use of the same names for the components of our present-day solar system. Saturn, Sun, and Moon are intended as names for evolutionary forms the Earth went through in the past. The relationships between these worlds of the ancient past and the celestial bodies that make up our present solar system will become clear in the course of the descriptions that follow. It will then also become clear why these names were chosen. Conditions during these four planetary incarnations will now be described, but only in brief outline. The processes, beings, and destinies on Saturn, Sun, and Moon were truly as varied as on Earth itself, so only a few individual characteristics of these conditions will be emphasized in order to illustrate how earthly conditions developed out of earlier ones. We must also keep in mind that the further back we go, the less similar these conditions are to the present day, and yet in order to describe them at all, we have to characterize them by using mental images derived from present-day earthly circumstances. Thus, when we use words such as light or heat with regard to these earlier stages, we must not forget that they do not mean exactly the same thing as what we now call light and heat. And yet this terminology is correct, because what light and heat developed out of is apparent to observers of the supersensible at earlier stages of evolution. By following the descriptions given here, we will be able to gather from the context what mental images we need in order to arrive at illustrations and comparisons that characterize events that took place in the far distant past. This difficulty in finding suitable descriptions becomes especially significant with regard to planetary conditions prior to the Moon incarnation. The conditions prevailing during the Moon incarnation itself still showed a certain similarity to earthly conditions, so when we attempt to describe them, their similarity provides certain clues about how to express supersensibly acquired perceptions in clear ideas. It is a different matter when the Saturn and Sun phases of evolution are described. What is accessible to clairvoyant observation there is very different from the objects and beings belonging to our present sphere of life, and this makes it extremely difficult to bring these ancient realities into the scope of supersensible consciousness. But since our present makeup cannot be understood without going back as far as the Saturn state, these realities must be described. These descriptions will certainly not be misunderstood by anyone who keeps this difficulty in mind and is aware that much of what is said is more of an allusion to actual realities than an exact description of them. A contradiction might be found between what is said here and on the following pages, and what is said in the paragraph beginning on page 125 about the past continuing to exist in the present. We might imagine that an earlier Saturn, Sun, or Moon state, or even a human form such as is described here as having existed during those bygone stages, does not exist anywhere alongside the current state of our Earth. It is true that there are no Saturn, Sun, and Moon humans running around among Earthlings, in the same way that there are little children running around among 50-year-olds. However, humankind's earlier states are supersensibly perceptible within earthly human beings. In order to recognize this, we must only have acquired a power of discrimination that includes the full scope of life's circumstances. Just as the little child is present along with the 50-year-old, the corpse, the sleeper, and the dreamer are also present along with the living, waking, earthly human being. Even if these various manifestations of the present-day human being are not the direct equivalents of the various stages of evolution, an objective observer will nonetheless see these stages in them. The body is the oldest of the present four elements of our makeup, and in its own way it is also the one that has achieved the greatest degree of perfection. Supersensible research shows that this physical human element was already present during the Saturn phase of evolution. However, as will become evident in the course of this description, the form it had on Saturn was something completely different from the present physical human body. It is inherent in the nature of this present physical body that it can only survive in connection with the life body, astral body, and I, as has been described earlier in this book. This connection did not yet exist on Saturn. At that time, the physical body was undergoing its first evolutionary stage and did not incorporate these other elements. It matured enough to receive a life body only in the course of the Saturn phase of evolution. But in order for it to actually do so, Saturn first had to spiritualize and then reincarnate as Sun. During the Sun incarnation, what the physical body had become on Saturn had to develop all over again, as if from a residual embryo, before it could imbue itself with an ether body. Incorporating an ether body changed the character of the physical body, raising it to a second level of perfection. Something similar took place during the Moon phase of evolution, when our predecessors, having evolved from the Sun to the Moon, incorporated the astral body. This transformed the physical body for a third time, raising it to a third level of perfection. The life body was similarly transformed and was then at its second level of perfection. During the Earth phase, the I was incorporated into our human predecessors, who consisted of physical, etheric, and astral bodies at that point. Through this process, the physical body achieved its fourth level of perfection, the life body its third, and the astral body its second, while the I is still only in its first stage of existence. If we can devote ourselves to taking an unbiased look at the human being, we will have no difficulty imagining these elements' different degrees of perfection in the right way. All we need to do is to compare the physical body with the astral body in this respect. Obviously, the astral body, as a soul component, is at a higher level of evolution than the physical body. And in future, when it has been perfected, it will be much more significant for our overall makeup than the present physical body. In its own way, however, the physical body has reached a certain climax in its evolution. Just think of the structure of the heart, which is organized in harmony with the greatest possible wisdom, or of the wonderful construction of the brain, or even of a single part of a bone, such as the upper end of the thigh bone. Within the end of this bone we find a regularly structured network or trellis-like pattern of delicate rods. The whole thing is arranged so as to yield the best possible results for the surface of the joint, for example the best distribution of friction, so that it achieves the right kind of mobility while using as little material as possible. We find wisdom-filled arrangements such as this in all parts of the physical body. And if we then go on to observe the harmonious interaction between the parts and the whole, we will certainly agree that this member of our human makeup is complete and perfect in its own way. any apparent ineffectiveness in certain parts of the body or disturbances in its structure or functioning seem unimportant in comparison. We will even discover that in a certain respect, such disturbances are only the necessary shadow side of the wisdom-filled light that illumines our entire physical organism. Now let's compare this to the astral body as the vehicle of our pleasure and pain, desires and passions. What insecurity prevails there with regard to joy and sorrow? What frequently meaningless desires and passions are played out, often running counter to our higher aims? The astral body is only beginning to achieve the harmony and internal consistency that we already find in the physical body. Similarly, it is possible to show that the ether body, although more perfect in its own way than the astral body, is less perfect than the physical body. If we consider the eye in the right way, it will also become evident that it is currently only at the very beginning of its evolution. To what extent, for example, has it already accomplished its task of transforming the other components of our makeup into manifestations of its own nature? For those familiar with spiritual science, the results of outer observations in this area are underscored by something else. We might point out that the physical body is subject to illness, but spiritual science is in a position to demonstrate that a great percentage of all illness originates in errors and aberrations of the astral body that destroy the perfect harmony of the physical body in a roundabout way, through being transmitted to the ether body. Both this deeper connection, which can only be touched on here, and the actual reason for many disease processes elude any scientific method of observation that chooses to confine itself to physical sense-perceptible facts. Since, in most cases, this connection results in damage to the astral body that does not produce pathologies in the physical body during the lifetime in which this damage occurs, but only in the following one, the laws governing this process are meaningful only for those who acknowledge the existence of repeated human lives. But even if we do not choose to acquire this deeper knowledge, looking at life in the usual way will also show us that human beings indulge in far too many gratifications and desires that undermine the harmony of the physical body. And gratification, desire, passion, and so on have their seat in the astral body rather than in the physical body. In many respects, the astral body is still imperfect enough to destroy the perfection of the physical body. It should be pointed out again, at this point, that discussing these things does not constitute an attempt to prove spiritual scientific statements about the evolution of the four members of our human makeup. Any proof is taken from spiritual research itself, which shows that the physical body has undergone four transformations toward higher degrees of perfection, while our other members have undergone fewer, as already described. Here, we are simply attempting to show that spiritual research communicates facts whose effects are also evident in the varying degrees of perfection of the physical body, life body, and so on, and that these different levels of perfection are also outwardly perceptible. The end of the first part of chapter 4, up to, but not including, paragraph 17, which is where the Saturn phase description proper starts.